Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the October 29th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arthur Village Board, audit shows funds up, by Arianna Cherry. The Arthur Village Board met Monday evening, October 20th, where trustees reviewed the annual auditor's report from McGuire, Juhas, Huffman, and Buckley CPAs. The report showed nothing unusual and most fund balances up from the previous year. Total expenses for the reporting period were $105,000. Trustees voted to approve the report as presented. During the general discussion, board members discussed employee health insurance renewal rates. They were also encouraged to contact their state representatives to oppose House Bill 3266, which mandates prevailing wages for TIF projects exceeding $25,000. Additionally, trustees noted the limited availability of lots in the Meadowview subdivision and agreed to proceed with phase 2, 3, and 4 of the development. Arthur will also participate in a regional holiday display effort, coordinating with nearby communities to feature different inflatable themes. Arthur's chosen theme will be candy canes. Other items discussed and approved. Police Chief Elliot Tinnen will be out for 7 to 10 days on medical leave. During his absence, officers will continue to handle routine patrol and local needs. Board approved the removal of part-time officer John J.P. Lulk from the Arthur Police Department due to his limited availability for scheduled hours. The board also approved posting openings for 2 part-time officer positions. Public Works Director Grant Corum noted that his department has been working diligently to complete outdoor maintenance and address ongoing water leak issues before the weather turns. Postponed a decision on changes to the Arthur Community Center fee schedule agreement that any adjustment should not affect those who've already made reservations. Approved payment of $680,000 to Buds for Hope for holiday greenery and bows to decorate the Welcome Center and gazebo. Request for a variance at 419 Crestwood Drive was approved, permitting a garage to be built exceeding 15 feet in height within the side yard setback. Additionally, lot number 15 in the Meadowview subdivision was sold to investor Bryson Wonker for $24,500, which is slightly less than its appraised value of $25,500. Construction on this property is anticipated to start later this fall. Resolution 1020A-2025 was approved for the construction of a livestock management facility located at County Roads 120 East and 300 North within the village's Douglas County zoning jurisdiction. The facility will be used for chicken egg production. The eggs will then be sold to a company based in Morris. Approved $1,500 grant to the Arthur Area Association of Commerce for WCIA-WCIX TV advertising package. This 50-50 economic development grant will fund 60 30-second commercials promoting holiday shopping in Arthur. Village also has an economic development budget of $60,000 for the year. Approximately $54,000 has already been spent or allocated to projects, leaving a remaining balance of almost $9,000. This remaining amount could be utilized for additional marketing initiatives such as potential billboard advertising outside of Tuscola. The next article, Tuscola City Council approved change order at Master Meter Station, by David Porter. With barely a quorum present, the Tuscola City Council sped through its sparse agenda Monday night. Mayor Pro Tem Dave Slaughter may have broken his own record with a 7-minute meeting. Alderman Scott Day is the unofficial keeper of such records, but he arrived right after the meeting concluded. The council approved a change order on the Master Meter Station in the amount of $8,800. The change is due to identifying a need for an additional sampling port to be installed along with a solenoid valve on the main control that will allow better control of the flow, especially when users downstream call for more water. The valve is expected to keep the water tower from overfilling or the distribution system from becoming overpressurized. Also approved was Salvation Army Holiday Collections November 7th through December 20th. The council approved an agreement with the Illinois Municipal League Risk Management Association for its Min-Max program, which the city has been on for many years. It provides a discount in the city's loss fund, but also carries a risk of additional costs if there is a large loss. City Administrator Drew Howell, in his written report, said the city has benefited from this program for all but 1 year. Council also approved the renewal of its ag lease with Paul Coons. Coons Brothers Farm has managed the crop at the city's water waste irrigated field for many years. The previous agreement expired in 2018, but nobody noticed. The new 5-year lease is retroactive to 2018 with a new expiration date of 2028. Absent from Monday's meeting were Alderman Alan Shoemaker, Scott Day, Mike Morris, and Mayor Dan Kleiss. The next article, Tuscola School Board, December meeting moved routine business, by Ben Crane. The Tuscola Community Unit District 301 Board of Education voted Monday night to move its December meeting to Thursday, December 18th, and handle a full agenda that included donations, personnel changes, and building level updates. Board members approved several donations totaling more than $700 for district programs. These included a $75 memorial gift for the Tuscola High School football team in memory of Pat Pierce, a $300 contribution from an anonymous donor to help a child fund, a $50 donation from Ron Oakes to Mrs. Kerner's class, and $294 from Kona Ice to support the North Ward PBIS program. North Ward principal Jordan Lowers reported a busy month highlighted by the annual Tiger Trot Fun Run on October 10th and a successful Fire Prevention Week program hosted by the Tuscola Fire Department. The Kids K-Kids raised over $600 for the Douglas County Animal Shelter through a coin drive, and students enjoyed the PTO-sponsored Book Bash and Book Character Walk. Lowers also thanked Sol Denmar for providing lunch to staff and praised the maintenance team for assisting with school landscaping. East Prairie Principal Jared Van Osdell shared encouraging results from the state assessments. The school's Illinois report card scored improved to 74.37, up from 69.01 in 2023. Notably, 70% of students met or exceeded expectations in English language arts and 37% in math, both increases from last year. Van Osdell recognized the efforts of teachers and students, congratulated Students of the Month and EcoTeam participants, and thanked local police and fire departments for assisting with the ALICE safety drills. At the high school, Principal Justin Bozarth congratulated Chloe Fowler for being named Rotary Student of the Month and recognized Kate Foles as the CIC Individual Cross Country Champion. Lainey Yantis and Lane McCall advanced out of the golf regionals, and Emma Spillman earned Key Club Member of the Summer for competing 55 volunteer hours. The school will host its Veterans Day Assembly on November 11th at 9 a.m., and the fall play, The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, will run November 21st through 23rd. Superintendent Gary Alexander reported total bills for the month of $1,444,000, including $759,000 for payroll and $284,000 in operating expenses. The district's annual audit will be presented at the November meeting following a scheduling conflict this month. Alexander also noted several Freedom of Information Act requests received by the district, including one seeking records related to North Ward Principal Jason Wallace's administrative leave, along with requests from Smart Procure and Brewster for purchase order and textbook procurement data. The superintendent reminded board members about the upcoming Illinois Association of School Boards joint annual conference set for November 20th to 23rd, encouraging those attending to share notes from the sessions with colleagues unable to attend. The board accepted several resignations, including Jack Ledbetter as East Prairie's softball head coach and Hannah Foreman and Emil Kane as paraprofessionals. Darcy Voiles was approved for the transfer to an interventionalist position at Tuscola High School starting in the 26-27 school year. Brianna Martin was granted leave of absence beginning February 2026. The board also approved the contract of the special education director. Members approved the consent agenda, including minutes from the September 29th meeting, treasurer and bookkeeper reports, and bills totaling over $1 million. An activity account for the Warrior Den was also opened. The next article, Tuscola Man Killed in Macon County Crash by Ben Crane. A Tuscola man was killed Thursday evening when his car collided with farm equipment near Dalton City, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. Authorities identified the victim as Thomas G. Duker, 51, of Tuscola. The crash occurred around 7 p.m. on October 23rd along 85th Street near Gosnell Road, just north of Dalton City. Investigators said a tractor was traveling south on 85th Street while towing an applicator containing anhydrous ammonia when the crash happened. The applicator was extended into the northbound lane, and Duker's northbound sedan struck it. Duker was pronounced dead at the scene. The ammonia tank was not ruptured, so no hazardous material leak, officials said. The tractor operator was cited for improper lane usage, and further charge could be considered after review by the Macon County Attorney's Office. Lieutenant Scott Flannery of the Sheriff's Office urged motorists to drive carefully on rural roads during harvest season. Decreased natural lighting and the onset of colder weather means that farmers are working extra hours to get their crops harvested, Flannery said in a statement. No additional injuries reported. The crash remains under investigation. The next article, Whiteman's Gift Reflects Lifelong Bond with Arcolic Public Library by Ben Crane. When lifelong Arcola native and Parkland College employee Leah Whiteman decided to leave a gift of $50,000 to the Arcola Public Library, she didn't attach any conditions or restrictions. She just wanted to give something back to the place that helped shape her. She told me as a young girl she spent a lot of time in the library in Arcola, said Don Overton, executor of her estate. She said she'd like to donate some money to them, basically to do with what they wanted. There were no strings attached. The donation, which library officials are still determining how to use, stems from Whiteman's lifelong appreciation for books, education, and the town she never stopped calling home. Overton said she'd spoken fondly of her school days in Arcola and the hours she spent reading in the local library. Whiteman went on to work at Parkland College in Champaign from the time the school opened until her retirement in 1995, managing the college bookstore and watching the campus grow from its first location in a converted elementary school to its current site. She worked there from the start, Overton said. It was technically the bookstore with a library, and she stayed there until she retired. She really enjoyed it. Financially, Whiteman was careful but savvy. Overton said she made wise investments and multiplied many times over. She made good investments in stock, he said. She got into Apple Computer and other tech companies at just the right time. She didn't spend a whole lot. She just let things grow, kind of like a snowball going downhill. Her modest lifestyle and conservative investing allowed her to leave significant gifts to causes she cared for, including the Arcola Public Library and the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, which will commemorate the Round Barn facility in her honor. That interest in barns, Overton said, came from her upbringing. Whiteman was raised along Filson Road East in Arcola near a round barn that was destroyed by a tornado. The same storm also damaged barn and her own family's property. She had an interest in barns because of that, Overton said. The tornado took down the one south of her home, and it stuck with her all of her life. Whiteman was also an avid reader and collector. Her home library included roughly 20 feet of books devoted to Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, many of them purchased at a garage or estate sales. Overton said he has spoken with the Arcola Public Library about possibly housing the collection in the future. She had a great interest in Abraham Lincoln, he said. She always hoped her books could be kept together somewhere. For Overton, Whiteman's gift to the library perfectly reflects who she was, quiet, practical, and generous, in a way that carried her hometown spirit forward. She enjoyed Arcola and spoke highly of it, he said. She just wanted to give something back to the place that gave her so much when she was young. In the next article, Trick-or-Treating Guide for Douglas County by Ben Crane. As pumpkins begin to glow and autumn leaves crunch beneath eager feet, the rural towns of Douglas County are gearing up for the October's spookiest night. Whether you're escorting a pint-sized ghost, manning a trick-or-treat station, or simply enjoying the community buzz, here's a guide to what each town has planned for Halloween 2025. Tuscola. In Tuscola, the fun begins early and ends while the candy stash is still manageable. Downtown hosts the city's Tuscola Boo Bash on Tuesday, October 28th from 5 to 7 p.m., a trunk-or-treat style event that kicks off the broader festivities. Trick-or-treating across the city is slated for Friday, October 31st from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. This early evening slot accommodates younger trick-or-treaters and families looking for well-lit light outings. Arcola. Arcola invites families first to a lively downtown trunk and treat at the Broom Palace on Friday, October 31st from 5 to 6 p.m., followed by citywide trick-or-treating from 6 to 8 p.m. The downtown party gives community groups and businesses a chance to hand out candy in one festive cluster before the wider neighborhood rounds begin. Arthur. Arthur will be hustling with Halloween fun this year as both the trunk-or-treat and the safe trick-or-treat take place on Friday, October 31st. The trunk-or-treat will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. in Eberhard Park, featuring decorated trunks, music from DJZ, Magoody's coffee truck, and plenty of candy for kids and families. The village's safe trick-or-treat runs from 4 to 9 p.m. across town for houses with porch lights on. Participants are encouraged to stay on sidewalks, travel in groups, and wear reflective clothing for safety. Camargo. The indoor trunk-or-treat at Victory Church, 100 East 2nd Street, will run Friday, October 31st from 5 to 6:30 p.m., offering a weather-protected and family-friendly venue. Newman. In Newman, trick-or-treat is scheduled for Friday, October 31st from 4 to 7 p.m., as posted on the city website. Before that, GOAL, Newman's trunk-or-treat, on Sunday, October 26th from 3 to 5 p.m., gives generous time for families to participate without rushing. Villa Grove. Trick-or-treating is scheduled for Friday, October 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. per the city council agenda. This time framework strikes an excellent balance between daylight safety and Halloween atmosphere. What families should know. Weather-appropriate costumes and safe reflective accessories, especially for earlier evening hours. For each town, note that trunk-or-treat events earlier in the week, October the 26th, are ideal alternatives for less chaotic or daytime-friendly outings. Where official times are not yet published, Arthur, Atwood, Camargo, Hinsborough plan to monitor the municipal social media pages and local churches' community groups. Often these publish the final hours on the days leading up to October 31st. Regardless of the location, parents are encouraged to travel in groups, use well-lit routes, and check candy when arriving home. We'll move now to the obituaries. Janice Ann Apple Schmidt, 80, of Robinson, formerly of Arthur, passed away peacefully at 7:14 a.m. on Saturday, October 25th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, November 1st, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. The Reverend Alex Hack will officiate. Burial will follow in the Arthur Cemetery. Bill and Edith Brandenburg. Graveside services for Bill and Edith Brandenburg will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, November 4th at the Mackville Cemetery, Atwood. Military rites will be accorded. Bill went to join Edith in heaven on October 23rd, 2025. The family wishes to express our sincere gratitude to Carriage Crossing, Champaign nurses and staff, and Transitions Hospice for the care and compassion for our father, and Hilligosh Schrader Funeral Home for their kind attention. Susan Bonham of Temple, Texas, passed away at Baylor Scott and White Hospital on September 24, 2025. She was 70 years old. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 1st at the Cartwright Cemetery, rural Tuscola. Marsha Jean Riggs Shanks will be remembered for her life of service and taking care of others. Thousands of newborns and their mothers were comforted and cared for during her 45 years of nursing. She passed away the morning of October 23rd in the farmhouse where she spent 30 years of her life. In accordance with her wishes, her ashes will be spread on that farm and a stone marker will be placed directly adjacent to other members of her family at Centennial Cemetery in Villa Grove. Visitation will be held 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Joint's Funeral Home, 1375 Illinois Route 130, Villa Grove. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at United Community Church, 300 Lincoln Street, Broadlands. Peggy Dorothea Harmon, 75 of Arthur, passed away Sunday, October 19, 2025 at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, surrounded by her family. Celebration of life services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday at the Arthur United Methodist Church with Pastor Jill Bunker officiating. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at the church and 1 hour prior to the service on Saturday. Burial will follow at the Arthur Cemetery. Schrader Funeral Homes is assisting the family with arrangements. The next article, U.S. House Minority Leader Jeffries Accelerates Illinois Redistricting Push, New York Democrat Makes Stop in Chicago and Springfield, by Brendan Moore. While candidates filed petitions Monday to run under Illinois' existing congressional district lines, U.S. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries brought his redistricting campaign to Illinois, pitching top state Democrats on a new map in a series of closed-door meetings. Dozens of congressional candidates were in Springfield that morning for the biennial spectacle of petition filing for the primary election, which is slated for March 17th. At the same time, Jeffries met with members of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus and black members of the state's congressional delegation in Chicago. Later Monday, he traveled to Illinois' capital city to meet with House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch, Democrat of Hillside, and Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat of Oak Park, on these matters. Jeffries told reporters in the Capitol that his talks with Harmon and Welch were positive and focused on the need for us to keep all options on the table and respond decisively. Welch echoed Jeffries' sentiment in a statement released after their meeting. State lawmakers returned to Springfield for the final 3 days of their fall veto session on Tuesday, likely their last trip to the Capitol until January. Even though dozens of Illinois congressional candidates have already filed their petitions, Jeffries downplayed any urgency for lawmakers to act this week. "We're not convinced that this is something that needs to happen in the next 2 or 3 days," Jeffries said. "It's something that needs to be strongly considered and can figure out a path forward." Post-veto session action, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has been coy about redrawing Illinois' maps, echoed Jeffries telling reporters before he filed his petition for re-election that redistricting was possible but doesn't have to happen during the veto session. "It could happen after that," Pritzker said, "but right now I think there's just a lot of conversation going on." Jeffries' push is meant to counter President Donald Trump's mid-decade redistricting project in GOP-led states ahead of the 2026 midterm elections. So far, Texas, Missouri, and North Carolina have redrawn their lines to favor Republicans, and Indiana Governor Mike Braun on Monday called a special session for his state's legislature next week to redraw the Hoosier State map. It's clear that Democrats are going to have to respond thoughtfully but forcefully across the nation, Jeffrey said, citing the latest GOP map effort. But Jeffrey's pitch has been with a cool reception by Illinois Democrats, who note that the state's map already has a 14-3 split in favor of the party. Black lawmakers had expressed concerns over the potential dilution of black voting power in the state's three historically black congressional districts. I'm open to listening, but I think Illinois has done our fair share for the Democratic Party, said State Representative Marcus Evans, Democrat of Chicago, in Springfield, filing his petitions for re-election. I think some other states can definitely do more. Jeffries told reporters that the 8 to 10 black lawmakers who attended the meeting in Chicago were very open-minded about finding a path forward. Our commitment is to make sure that the ability of black and Hispanic communities continue to elect the candidates of their choice is not diluted in any way that would prevent that from happening now and into the future, Jeffries said. Illinois' partisan map. Illinois lawmakers in 2021 enacted one of the most partisan gerrymanders in the country. Republicans have been delegated just 18% of the state's congressional seats, despite President Donald Trump winning 43% of the statewide vote in 2024. Democrats achieved this by packing Republican into as few districts as possible while consolidating Democratic pockets of strength downstate and stretching out their partisan advantage in the Chicago region as far as they possibly could. But with Democrats' options to counter Republican gerrymandering limited outside of California, they're turning to states like Illinois, where the party has unified control of state government and the power to redistrict is in the hands of the state legislature. Harmon, speaking with Capitol Hill, Illinois, ahead of his meeting with Jeffries, said everything is on the table, but he has not yet seen a concrete proposal. Jeffries confirmed that he did not show Harmon or Welch any maps during their back-to-back meetings in the legislative leaders of Capitol offices. New primary date? If they were to move forward, lawmakers would have to consider moving the primary date or tweaking signature requirements for petitions. Noting the logistical challenge of a remap, Harmon said, standing outside the Illinois State Board of Education, there's a whole lot of folks filing for Congress standing right behind me in line right now. All things are possible, but timing is not optimal, Harmon said. There are more candidates running for Congress than usual on account of a once-in-a-generation turnover among Democratic elected officials. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin's retirement set off a domino effect with two Democratic incumbents, Representative Robin Kelly of Linwood and Representative Raja Krishnamurthy of Schaumburg, giving up their seats in bids to succeed him in the upper house. Representative Danny Davis, Democrat of Chicago, and Representative Jan Schakowsky of Evanston are retiring, thus creating a mad dash for safe Democratic seats that haven't been open in decades. State Representative LaShawn Ford, Democrat of Chicago, one of the 10 Democrat candidates who has filed to run in Illinois' 7th Congressional District, a historically black seat based on Chicago's West Side, said he would support a remap if it complies with the Voting Rights Act provisions protecting minority-majority representation. The goal is to do it right, Ford said. We haven't seen a map, so there's no reason to be against something that we haven't seen. Fight fire with fire. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat of Springfield, appeared at a rally with Governor J.B. Pritzker and other top Illinois Democrats later Monday morning, said she was supportive of a new map. If we can pick up a seat, I think we have to fight fire with fire, Budzinski, whose snaking district connects major Democratic constituencies in central and southern Illinois, said. I think there's going to be a path forward to doing it. Budzinski acknowledged her concerns that a new map could dilute Democratic support in her district and thus make her more vulnerable to Republican challenge, but she said, I'm ready for a fight. If we don't have a check and balance on this administration after 2026, this country is going to look fundamentally different after 2026, Budzinski said, adding that all map options, as unprinted as they are, should be on the table. In the next article, tips for winterizing exterior living areas. When summer entertaining season draws to a close, homeowners need to ensure their outdoor living areas can handle weather that's right around the corner. Although outdoor furniture and other items tend to be durable, the impact of snow, wind, and ice can have on them may lead to damage over time. That is why homeowners take steps to winterize their outdoor spaces and protect their belongings. Here's a look at how to prepare for the winter to come. Furniture. Cover or store furniture to protect it from the elements. Covering it with weatherproof covers can be adequate, but if storing indoors is not possible. Deep clean. Items that will be covered or stored should be thoroughly cleaned prior to being removed from the space for the season. Lingering dirt and moisture can cause damage. Insulate and drain. Don't risk damage to pipes, which can freeze and crack in the cold. Shut off the water supply to exterior faucets and drain water lines to prevent pipes from freezing and bursting. Use foam pipe insulation to prevent freezing and cover any exposed pipes. Apply mulch. After cleaning up garden debris, think about applying mulch to garden beds and cover tender plants to protect from the weather. Check gutters. Be sure that gutters and downspouts are clear of leaves and any additional debris. If gutters and downspouts are not cleared, ice dams may form on the roof and cause water damage. Inspect and repair. Inspect walkways and driveways for any damage and make repairs now so water does not seep in and cause further issues with freeze-thaw cycles. Consider applying a sealant to protect surfaces from snow and ice. Pools and spas. It's essential to follow the industry or manufacturer's recommendation for closing down swimming pools and spas for the season. While covers may not be essential in all climates, covering can help prevent leaves and other debris from getting into the water. Water should be expelled from pipes and tubing to prevent freezing and bursting. If space allows, consider moving a pool pump indoors to prolong its longevity. Turn off the electricity on the outlet which the filter is plugged in. There may be additional region-specific steps to winterize a property, but these pointers are a good starting point to protect your outdoor spaces. And another article, signs it might be time for room addition project. No one enjoys being in cramped quarters, whether a person battles a legitimate cause, a case of claustrophobia when confined in tight spaces, or simply for a place to stretch out. There's no denying the appeal of a little extra room. That's particularly so at home, where cramped spaces can make it hard to unwind. When homeowners feel their walls are closing in on them, many choose to build space via a room addition. Room addition projects are expensive and extensive undertakings, with the home renovation expert at Angie estimating the average add-on cost of $48,000. But Angie estimates such project can cost as much as $72,000 or even more, depending on the size of the space and the features chosen. The financial commitment when adding room is significant, but homeowners and residents also will need to prepare for potentially lengthy disruption in their daily routines. Various online resources, including Angie, suggest room addition projects typically take around 3 to 4 months. With so much at stake, homeowners who think they might benefit from a room addition can look for various signs to help them determine if such a project is right for them. Increasingly cluttered spaces. Cramped quarters without much space for people are perhaps the most noticeable sign that residents can benefit from some additional space in a home. Cluttered spaces suggest homeowners may have run out of room for their stuff, and a custom addition can provide that extra room while contributing to a more calming ambiance in the common space that may no longer be overwhelmed by papers, toys, and other items that can quickly take over a home that lacks space. Lifestyle hurdles. Millions of homeowners like to entertain friends and family, and that's more manageable for some than it is for others. If interior or exterior spaces do not accommodate hosting, a room addition that expands an existing kitchen or living room might be the ideal renovation project. Functionality challenge. A home that no longer has enough space to meet your needs is another sign a room addition may be in order. This very issue emerged for millions of professionals during the COVID-19 pandemic and has remained a challenge ever since. Indeed, an increase in days spent working remotely has left many homeowners grateful to work from home, but desirous of a designated remote workspace. A room addition to accommodate a home office can be just what remote workers need to restore full functional status to their homes. Cost. While the sticker price of a home addition may or may not raise an eyebrow, the project is almost certain to provide more cost-effective than moving. According to data from the U.S. Census Bureau and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the average sales price of a home in the United States reached $503,000 in January 2025. While that marked a roughly $16,000 decrease from a year earlier, it's still a high figure that many homeowners are not willing to pay. A cost comparison detailing the price to move versus the price to build an addition may indicate that the latter option is the homeowner's best bet. A room addition could be the perfect renovation project for homeowners who need more space but still prefer to stay put. And time for a couple of briefs. Movie at the Moose. Family Service Senior Resource Center hosts Movie at the Moose Wednesday, November 5th at 12:30 p.m. at the Tuscola Moose Lodge. Movie and popcorn are free of charge for those age 60 plus living independently in Douglas County. For information, call 217-599-1324. And that is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.